My number one book of all time as a trial lawyer is Becoming a Trial Lawyer by Rick Friedman. Rick has a chapter called Beyond Technique, and the concept overall being that there's kind of two parts of the learning process of becoming a trial lawyer. Well, I should say three, okay?
Welcome to Just Verdicts with your host, Brendan Lupitin, a podcast dedicated to the pursuit of just verdicts for just cases. Join us for in-depth interviews and discussions of cutting-edge trial strategies that will give you the keys to conquering the courtroom. Produced and powered by LawPods.
Welcome back to Just Verdicts. In this episode, going to do something a little bit different, sort of along the lines of the trial nugget episodes that I did a while back. The interviews of great lawyers getting great verdicts, you know, along the lines of the name of the podcast, will still be the backbone of the show. But periodically, I want to make episodes about topics that resonate with me that I hope will connect with you, give you something to think about, give you some actionable takeaways for your practice as a trial lawyer. And honestly, you know, what I'm going to talk about, I hope helps you, but this is also part of my trying to be more intentional of reconnecting with being a student of trial law. You know, as I came up, I would just nerd out, read every single trial guide's book that there was, reread it, highlight, underline notes. And admittedly, there's that kind of point you get to in your career where you get busy with other things. And that obsession and that sort of core attribute that made you what you were starts to fade away. And I think that then you can kind of get some ring rust because you're not, you know, continually learning. So a big part of this is for myself to continually learn, and hopefully we can all get something out of this. And so in these episodes, sort of along the lines, I don't know if you ever listened to the Founders podcast by David Senra, where he would basically dissect books about, you know, famous founders of companies and sort of take portions of the book, talk about them, add his own thoughts to them. That's what I'm going to be trying to do here. And if there's any particular books that, you know, you dig, you think that I haven't covered, maybe I haven't read before, you know, hit me up. I can talk about those. For anybody that knows me, you know, my number one book of all time as a trial lawyer is Becoming a Trial Lawyer by Rick Friedman. And so that's what today's segment is going to be about. Now, before we get to this chapter from Becoming a Trial Lawyer by Rick Friedman, titled Beyond Technique, I want to do a quick PSA. Selfishly, I would immensely appreciate if you would consider leaving a review on Apple or Spotify for the show. If you like it, if it's helped you, you get a kick out of it, you know, listen regularly. Helps me, helps the show if we get some more reviews on Apple or Spotify. And of course, on YouTube, if you want to smash that like or subscribe button, that would be great as well. And then the other part of the PSA today is if you or someone you know has gotten a great verdict and you'd like to talk about it, or you think it's a case, you know, worth discussing in depth on the show, please let me know. Always looking for interesting guests. Or even if you just have, you know, something interesting about trying cases or psychology or focus groups or whatever, you know, that relates to trying cases, you know, hit me up because I'd be interested in talking shop with anybody that has a love of this stuff like I do. So anyway, on to the main event. So as I mentioned, my favorite book is right here, Becoming a Trial Lawyer. I really think it should be required reading for anybody that has a real passion for trying cases, wants to try cases, has been trying cases for a long time. You know, I've been doing this for over 20 years now, and this book, and appropriately subtitled A Guide for the Lifelong Advocate, you know, is spot on because it really addresses a lot of different issues that happen over the life cycle of the trial lawyer. Things change, your perspective changes, and this book is just full of so many good pieces of advice, ways to think about life, trying cases, life as a lawyer, and all that stuff. So I really just can't recommend it enough, and you can buy it at Trial Guides, and I would just highly recommend you do so because it's just great on every level. So anyway, Rick has a chapter called Beyond Technique, and like every chapter, this one connected with me, and I'll just read a couple of different excerpts from this chapter, but the concept overall being that there's kind of two parts of the learning process of becoming a trial lawyer. Well, I should say three. Okay, number one is actually doing it. You can talk about it, you can read about it, you can learn about it, but you're never really going to learn about it until you go in and try cases. So that's obviously point number one. But after that, it kind of breaks down into two things. Number one being technique, how to cross-exam, formatting your opening statement, how to conduct a focus group, specific argument techniques in closing, how to admit documents and all that kind of stuff. That is the technical component of it. But this chapter talks about going beyond that, and that you need, as you go forward in time in your practice, to get beyond just being the lawyer that is spouting out what we think a lawyer should say in court. And, you know, it's a cliche term, but being more authentic, being more you yourself in court. And I think that's what Rick is really trying to get across here. So, you know, one of the first lines in this that connected with me is that Rick writes, lawyers with nearly flawless technique can lose case after case, while lawyers who appear clumsy and bumbling can win repeatedly. And I think right away, probably some lawyers like pop right into mind that fit both of those molds. I think when I used to sweat trials back in the day and run over to the Allegheny County Courthouse and watch whatever trial I could, you know, there was a number of times where I happened to stumble across a trial being tried by, you know, a lawyer that was sort of like well-known, dapper, you know, seems to be the lawyer type. And then I saw them in trial and something was just missing and it was kind of stale, just kind of the king's clothing type effect. And then, well, I've seen lots of obviously killer attorneys that also are just, they just got it all. But then I've definitely seen attorneys that are highly effective who sort of, you know, at first glance or blush, they wouldn't necessarily bowl you over with their, you know, just how like technically proficient and how perfect they were doing things. And maybe a better way to say it is that, you know, I've seen some great trial lawyers do things a lot differently than, you know, what all my books were telling me to do. I can remember, for example, sitting in a very high stakes trial of a very well-known, really good trial lawyer in Pittsburgh, who's actually been interviewed on this show before. And this was when I was just totally drinking the Kool-Aid of Reptile and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, they're watching opening arguments, you know, and I was aghast when this trial lawyer did an opening that was basically the opposite of everything that David Ball and Don Keenan had said in both Ball on Damages and Reptile. And I just walked out like, oh, well, they're going to lose. They're going to lose because they're not doing it the right way. And that lawyer went on to hit, you know, a massive eight-figure verdict afterward, which really created some cognitive dissonance for me. But as I've gotten older, I could understand why, is because A, they had a great case, but B, this particular trial lawyer, you know, he's authentic. He is himself. And he clearly connected with that jury, which is that sort of, you know, why this going beyond technique is so important. The who you are, the what you are in court, honestly, is probably more important than a lot of the technical aspects that is what most of the books and the CLEs cover these days. So anyway, Friedman goes on, don't think for a minute that I am denigrating technique. Techniques are your weapons. Study, save, and treasure them like any weapon you might depend on. Practice them until they become second nature. However, much teaching of trial practice loses sight of a significant truth. The weapon is less important than the person who chooses and wields it. He goes on, outstanding teachers, singers, lovers, and trial lawyers have one thing in common. They communicate a truth that resonates inside them. I don't know why, but that section reminded me of this interview I heard one time with Stan Lee, you know, one of the founders of Marvel Comics. And he was talking about how for the first many years that he was in the comic industry, he toiled away pretty miserably. Apparently, the industry was very different than it is now. And the topics were not about superheroes. They were more about war and things that just didn't appeal to Stan Lee. And he would go through the motions and drawing and creating, you know, these different comics, but he was miserable. And he was actually going to quit comics entirely. But then he talked to his wife about it, Joni, you know, said, I'm going to quit. And she said, you know, well, why not write a comic the way that you want to write? And she said, look, if it doesn't work, the worst thing that's going to happen is that they'll fire you, you know, and you were going to quit anyway. You know, but the point being, she said, why don't you just try it the way that you would do it, like being you. And Stan Lee took her advice and wound up creating, I think it was the Fantastic Four. you know, which then led to Hulk, Thor, X-Men, Iron Man, you know, Captain America, and every other huge, you know, Marvel thing out there. But the point being that Stan Lee had all the technical abilities. He could draw, he could, you know, write stories and do what was necessary, but he wasn't happy and he wasn't having a great deal of success until, you know, he took a shot at putting the real him into that comic book and creating something that was all him. You know, and then he had all the success that we know to this day. So back to Friedman's chapter on going beyond technique. He says, technique alone will not get you where you want to go. It will leave the jury and perhaps you holding on to a rubber life raft in a cold and turbulent sea. To be a good trial lawyer, be willing and able to give yourself to the jury, not the self you wish you were or the self you think the jury might wish you were, but your actual self. The part of you that is scared, angry, or tired, and the part of you that feels the justness of your case. So this section got me thinking about sort of the way I first started trying cases. I mean, so when I first started, I truly had no clue. And then I realized that there were books out there, you know, David Ball on damages, and then I discovered trial guides and whole world of CLEs and seminars and so forth. And I started to read. And back when I was like in early high school, I was obsessed with video games. And back then, of course, it was the arcades, but Mortal Kombat, Killer Instinct, Street Fighter. And, you know, the thing that appealed to me was that there were basically cheat codes. Or if you hit these buttons and move this joystick the right way, this will happen and you will win or you will move on. And that was how I approached trying cases, you know, when I first started to discover all these technique books. You know, okay, now I'm going to do the reptile ball opening. And here I'm going to, you know, cross-examine based on what I read in, you know, Dodd and I think it was Posner back in the day. You know, and here I'm going to do this closing that, you know, I read from Jim Perdue or whatever. And same thing over time. And, you know, just trying to apply these, you know, 100% technical aspects, believing that it's just a matter of figuring out the cheat code to the game and then you win the case. You know, I lost a lot of cases where I, you know, got several sort of just middling verdicts. And to be fair to me, I mean, they were probably really crappy cases that I was trying also. But, you know, the first case that I got a really good verdict on after trying and struggling and just trying to figure out like the whole big picture, not to say that I just magically figured it out, but a big part of it was how kind of personally invested I became into the case. The case just really became about, I just was so upset with what this big company had done to my client. My client, you know, he had done some wrong things also, and he was not an angel by any stretch of the imagination, but I just was so incensed. And I can remember in my closing argument, I had so much anger and, you know, just wanted this jury to see what I saw, that this company really had it coming to them. And wouldn't somebody please hold them accountable, you know, for all the BS that they had done in general and done to my client and so forth. And they did. They came back and they found in our favor. And I think that it really came across. Actually, I got a letter from one of the jurors. She sends me, I have it framed in my office. That's a really nice letter. And, you know, she basically just said that she could tell that I really cared about this. And it made her want to stand up for my client. And I just thought that was really cool. And that's not to say that I've been able to carry that forward forever afterward, but it was certainly very eye-opening to realize that it was not just the technical approach to the case that won. It was the real fight, the me putting myself in there and real Brendan kind of like being just so upset and getting that across to the jury. And that's not to say like just being mad and everything is the solution, but being personally invested is a big part of it. So anyway, Friedman goes on, most lawyers can't or don't want to do this. Okay. Showing jurors your real self is too scary. If you show them your real self and they decide against you, they are rejecting not just your client, but you. Much safer to show them Mr. Trial Lawyer or Miss Smart Professional Woman. If you lose the case, at least you aren't being rejected, dismissed, squashed. And certainly that is an occupational hazard that you're going to get your heart broken and you're going to get, you know, publicly rejected by 8 to 12 people when you lose these cases. It's difficult for anybody, but some people I think find it almost impossible. And maybe that's why, you know, they have a hard time tapping into anything other than, you know, the avatar of the lawyer that they're expected to be. So finishing up here, Rick writes, doing this can feel as if you are tearing out your heart and putting it on the jury rail. You are, in effect, saying, here is my heart, please don't crush it. And that is what you're doing. And yeah, it hurts to have your heart crushed. It feels really good when they don't and they find for you. And I think maybe that's that prospecting thing. It's, we humans have a much harder time prospecting theory with loss versus win. Losses, things that we lose, obviously having your heart crushed, is much more difficult for us to cope with than, you know, the benefit that we get from winning or gaining something. So finishing out here, Rick writes, in at least 10 difficult cases in my life, I am convinced my willingness to expose myself in this way is all that won the trial. Working extremely hard and applying every ounce of skill I could muster did nothing but make it a close case. At closing, the case still hung in the balance. Something more was required, something harder to deliver, my vulnerability. I had to make a leap of faith to get the jury to leap with me. And I'd love to hear if some of you have had that experience where, you know, there was a close case. Because, you know, going back to the video game concept or the cheat code, you know, like Contra, you know, up, up, down, down type thing, you know, applying just the technical stuff, if you learn it and know it really well, you're going to win those slam dunk cases that you're supposed to win. But I think it's in these really close cases, which is a lot of cases when you're going to trial, you know, those are the ones that are going to try more often. But those close cases where, you know, your ability to personally invest and be yourself and put your everything out there, yourself, your heart out there for the jury is your only chance really of winning those cases. And, you know, I think going back to that case I described, the first ever really great verdict that I got, you know, that I'll never forget, and winning it was, you know, it was just one of the most amazing things that I'd ever experienced. But it was a super close case. It was federal. It was 8 jurors. You needed to have unanimous. And the deliberations went on for 2.5 days. And, you know, there was one particular holdout, so I heard. And, you know, eventually the rest of the jurors, I think in part because I demonstrated that, you know, I truly believed that we were right. I put myself out there. I think they really went that extra distance to fight, whereas they may have thrown up their hands and said, okay, we're just stuck with a hung jury here and maybe we don't even get that verdict. But because of that, in that very, very close call, you know, I finally found that way. And I'm not even saying I did it intentionally. It just kind of happened, you know, that I think that's why they were able to eventually persuade that 8th juror to come along with them, you know, to get that unanimous verdict. So I think it's just something really important for all of us to keep in mind. You know, you can apply that to big picture stuff in life in general, you know, about being yourself versus being who people, parents, your family, your friends, you know, who you think they want you to be, you know. And so I think that sort of authenticity and, you know, finding that in yourself as much as you can and being aware of how important that can be in trial. And it's not to say that it's a, you know, a cure-all and you're going to win all your cases now just because you throw yourself into them and you're a good person. But I think the other big part of it is that even if you lose, at least you know that you were yourself and you gave everything of yourself and you didn't hold back and you didn't try to be, you know, some other thing in court. I think I've said this before that, you know, when trial is at its best, I kind of feel like I'm the best version of myself. You just kind of like feel like you're, you know, you're in a, just a good space and you can be yourself. And when you can almost feel like, you know, you can be yourself more there than, you know, anywhere else, or at least anywhere else, you know, that you're super comfortable, then I think you're kind of getting that point that Friedman's talking about of elevating beyond, you know, just applying the different techniques. And that is coming from someone who loves themselves a good trial technique. So anyway, I hope you got something out of this. You should go and read the full chapter. It's a super short chapter. It's like 3.5-4 pages, but it's a good one, like all the stuff that Friedman writes about. And yeah, I hope it just makes you kind of think about that for your next trial, like taking a step back when you're, you know, just super overwhelmed and, you know, dealing with all the scheduling stuff and things didn't go right. And they're trying to always come back and remember, am I myself? Am I present here? Am I being me, you know, above and beyond everything else? Because I think the jury senses that, you know, when you really need that jury to go your direction in a close case, you know, that can be the thing that makes all the difference. So thank you for listening as always. And until next time, Brendan Lupitin, Just Verdicts.
If you enjoy the show, please subscribe to the Just Verdicts podcast on your favorite platform and consider leaving a review. And if you're interested in co-counseling, local counseling, or referring a catastrophic injury case, we'd love to work with you. Call us at 412-281-4100 or visit our attorney referral page at pamedmal.com/refer. Thanks for listening.